You are listening to the podcast of Providence Church in Austin, Texas. We hope this message raises your affections for Jesus and helps you live out the gospel in everyday life.
Well, it's so good to worship with all of you today. I've enjoyed just being together. We are, as you could tell, jumping back into our study of 1 John today after taking a few weeks off. And as a reminder, if you haven't been with us, or even if you have, as a reminder, the goal of 1 John as a letter is assurance. John is writing this letter to Christians to give Christians assurance in their relationship with God. He wants us to know that we can know that we know God, right? He wants us to have confidence in that we're a child of God. And he tells us that we can know that because there's certain evidences that point to the fact that we're a child of God. Things like that he talks about in this letter, things like what we believe about Jesus, how we deal with sin, how we treat one another. And the last verse that we looked at 4 weeks ago, you just heard it, highlights some of the key evidence that points to whether or not we are a child of God. Let me read it to you again. 1 John chapter 3, verse 10. Listen to this. He says, "By this it is evident," meaning it's obvious, "who are the children of God and who are the children of the devil. Whoever does not practice righteousness is not of God, nor is the one who does not love his brother." So conversely, we could say whoever does practice righteousness is of God, and whoever loves his brother is of God, is a child of God. And so love is a really important piece of evidence that John is going to point to, that someone is a child of God. Love is really important. We could argue it's the most important virtue that's talked about in the New Testament, right? Like Jesus himself said in John 13, that the world will know that you're my disciples by your love for one another. The first fruit of the Spirit in Galatians 5 is love. The virtue that binds all the other virtues together in Colossians 3 is love, right? 1 Corinthians 13 says that you can speak in the tongues of angels. You can have you can have understanding of all mysteries and all knowledge. You can have the faith to move mountains, but if you don't have love, you're what? Nothing. You're nothing. And then it goes on to say that three things remain: faith, hope, and love. But the greatest of these is love. And so love is very important in the Christian life. In fact, I think John's big idea in our text today is that love is the distinguishing mark of a Christian. Love is the distinguishing mark of a Christian. It's the greatest outward evidence that we belong to God, that we're a child of God. All you need is love, right? All you need is love. Love is all you need. I've been singing that song all week long. I listened to it on Spotify on my way here today. When that song by the Beatles came out in 1967, "All You Need Is Love," it became sort of a worldwide anthem for the importance of love. And one of the recurring lines in that song is, "It's easy. All you need is love. It's easy." And I'm like, is it? Is it easy? If it's so easy, why don't we see more of it in the world? And I think it's because love is simple, but it's not easy, right? It's simple to talk about. It's simple to exalt. It's simple to define even, but it's not easy to practice. And what John is talking about today is putting love into practice. John wants us to know that the distinguishing mark of a Christian is love, love in practice. All right, so he tells us three things about love here. Let's look at them in this text. Three things about love. Here's the first thing he tells us. Love is an indicator. Love is an indicator, meaning it points to something very important. Look again at verse 10 and 11. 1 John chapter 3, verse 10. I'll read this verse again. "By this, it is evident," it's obvious, "who are the children of God and who are the children of the devil. Whoever does not practice righteousness is not of God, nor is the one who does not love his brother. For this is the message that you have heard from the beginning, that we should love one another. So there are two types of people in the world that John puts forth here. Children of God and children of the devil. John is very stark. He draws sharp contrast in this letter. I don't know if you've noticed that. It's either God or the devil, right? It's light or darkness. It's life or death. And what he's saying here is that love or lack of love is an indicator of whether you're a child of God or a child of the devil. Whether you walk in light or darkness, life and death, or death, right? There's no middle ground as John lays it out. Now, what John is saying here about the importance of love is not a new idea. He says, look at verse 11. He says, this is the message you've heard from the beginning that we should love one another. And so it's the message the apostles taught in the beginning of their ministry. But further back than that, it's what Jesus commanded. Jesus said in John 15, this is my commandment, that you should love one another in the same way that I've loved you. But further back than that, it's what the Old Testament taught. Leviticus 19 says what? Love your neighbor as you love yourself. But even further back than that, in the beginning of the Bible, at the beginning of humanity, God expected people to love one another. And so John is going to actually take us back to the beginning of the Bible, back to Genesis chapter 4, and he's going to show us another stark contrast. It's going to be the contrast between love and hate, right? He's going to show us the contrast of two ways of life, the way of God and the way of the devil, love and hate. And he's going to show that contrast by showing us two brothers who model that contrast, Cain and Abel. Look at verse 12. Verse 12, John says, we should not be like Cain, who was of the evil one, and he murdered his brother. And why did he murder him? Because his own deeds were evil, and his brother Abel's deeds were righteous. Now, I think it's very significant that John would take us back to a particular moment in time when something concrete, something tangible happened. Because love or lack of love always is concrete, right? It's tangible. It always takes place in real time. Love or lack of love is not abstract. It's real. And so John takes us back to Genesis chapter 4. And one day, Cain and his brother Abel went to worship. They went to church. They both went to make offerings to God. But Cain's heart was not really in it. Like, he didn't really want to go. He didn't really love God. He's just going through the motions religiously. But Abel was different. Hebrews chapter 11 says that when Abel came before God, he made his offering in faith, right? He was trusting in God. Jesus actually says of Abel in Matthew 23 that Abel was righteous. Why was he righteous? He was righteous because of his faith in God. He trusted in God. And so when he made an offering to God, God accepted Abel's offering and rejected Cain's offering. And that made Cain really, really angry. This is really important. Why was Cain angry at Abel? Not because he was doing bad things, but because he was doing good things, because he was living righteously. Cain was angry because his brother seemed so close to God. And that just burned him up. And so he plotted to kill him. And one day he said to his brother Abel, hey, let's go out in the field and do some work. And he knew what he was going to do out in the field. And this week I've been trying to think about what Cain was feeling and thinking in that moment as he walked out to that field, knowing exactly what he was going to do. And I imagine his heart rate went up. My heart rate goes up when I'm like trying to pull a prank on somebody. I'm just trying to pull off a joke the right way. I'm like, I get a little nervous inside. I can't imagine what he was feeling, plotting the murder of his own brother. But we know that out there in that field, he jumped his brother and he killed him. John actually says in verse 12, the word for murder is the word to slay. He slayed him. He butchered him. It's a word that you would use to if you were killing an animal. So it's likely that he slit his brother's throat and then just watched his brother's blood spill out on the ground. It's brutal. It's hate in the extreme. It's lack of love in the extreme form. And then God asks Cain, hey, where's your brother? And we know what he says. He says, I don't know. Am I my brother's keeper? And the unspoken answer to that question is, yes, you are your brother's keeper. Where is he? You were supposed to look out for him, but you took his life. You were supposed to love your brother, to look out for his best interests, but you took from him his greatest possession. And Cain's actions revealed, I think, what was in his heart. Love or lack of love is an indicator. What does it indicate? Look at verse 14. John tells us. 1 John chapter 3, verse 14. What does love or lack of love indicate? We know that we have passed out of death into life because we love the brothers. Right? Loving the brothers is an indicator that we've passed out of death into life. Whoever does not love abides in death. And so, being unloving is an indicator of spiritual death. Everyone who hates his brother, verse 15, is a murderer. And you know that, and Jesus talks, develops this in the Sermon on the Mount, Matthew chapter 5. Hate is equated with murder. And you know that no murderer has eternal life abiding in him. What's John saying here? John is saying that love is the greatest indicator of spiritual life in someone. Isn't it? Like, and on the flip side, he's saying that hatred is the greatest indicator of spiritual death in someone. How do you know someone loves God and has the life of God coursing through their veins? Well, they love others. That's the greatest indicator of spiritual life, their love for others. Now, I want you to hear this clearly. John is not saying that loving our brothers is what gives us spiritual life. He's not saying that loving others is what causes our salvation. He's saying that loving our brothers is evidence of our salvation. It's evidence that spiritual life is in us. It's actually the most logical outworking that we have spiritual life. It's the greatest indicator that we're a child of God. And most of us, we get to this point in the text and we breathe a sigh of relief because we're like, oh, thank goodness it's just about love. Because I'm a loving person. Check that box. I'm loving. I'm not like Cain, if that's the standard that John is laying out for. I'm not like Cain. I've never killed my brother, never killed my Christian brother. I've thought about it. People in GC occasionally, but I haven't carried through with it. Obviously, because I'm a loving person. See, nobody looks at themselves and says, yeah, I'm pretty unloving. Nobody looks at themselves and thinks, yeah, I seem to not think love is all that important in life. Everybody thinks love is important. Christians, atheists, Buddhists, Hindus, Muslims, secularists, everyone. It's the slogan of our culture. Just love people. Everybody thinks it's important. All you need is love. It's easy. And so John takes us a step further. And he's going to give us a particular definition of love here. And the way he's going to define love, it's not easy. It's actually the complete opposite of easy, the way he defines love in this text. Love is an indicator, but then secondly, he's going to tell us love is defined by the gospel. Love is defined by the gospel. Look at verse 16. Look what he says in verse 16. By this we know love. In other words, this is how we know what love is, what it looks like. That he, Jesus, laid down his life for us, and we ought to lay down our lives for the brothers. And so just as John took us to a particular moment in time with Cain and Abel to show us what hate looks like, now he takes us to a particular moment in time to show us what love looks like. Because love is concrete. Right? Love takes place in actual time, space, history. Love is tangible. And this time he doesn't take us out into a field, he takes us up to a hillside. Right? And Jesus walked up that hillside called Calvary or Golgotha with the same intentionality that Cain had when he invited his brother Abel out into the field. He knew what he was doing. Right? He had been planning for it. And I'm trying to imagine what Jesus was feeling and thinking as he walked up that hillside. I mean, I imagine his heart beat started to go up. His heart rate went up. I mean, my heart rate goes up when I'm going to have like my finger pricked, right? To have my blood tested or give a little blood. I start to get nervous. I can't imagine knowing that I'm going to die and knowing how I'm going to die like Jesus did in that moment. But he went on. He knew exactly what he was doing. In fact, in John chapter 10, he says, "No one takes my life from me. I lay it down on my own authority. I have the authority to give my life." And we know that there on Calvary, the Roman soldiers took him and they slew him. They slew him. Remember the word that John uses in chapter 12 today about Cain murdering his brother? It's the word to slay. It's the word to butcher. It's the word that you would use talking about killing an animal. And it's the same word that's used in Revelation chapter 5, verse 12, also written by John. "Worthy is the Lamb who was slain." Worthy is the Lamb who was slain. And all the bystanders watched the blood of the Lamb spill out onto the ground around the base of the cross. And John says to us, this is how we know what love is. That Jesus gave his life for us. He walked into it on purpose. The definition of love is self-sacrifice, right? And it's not just arbitrary self-sacrifice. It's sacrifice that's connected to a definite need, right? Jesus laid down his life in order to meet humanity's greatest need, which is redemption from sin and death. Right? By this, we know what love is. Jesus gave his greatest possession, his life, to meet our greatest need. Love is defined by the gospel. But John does not allow us just to stay there and just to observe Jesus' example and admire Jesus' example of love. He calls us actually to imitate it. But you see it, look at the second half of verse 16. He says, "And we ought to lay down our lives for the brothers." We ought to do the same. We ought to live like Jesus loved. John Stott says the self-sacrifice of Christ is not just a revelation of love to be admired. It's an example to copy. In other words, we ought to admire the love of Jesus. That's what we've been doing today. We come here on Sundays, we worship, we revel in the love of Jesus. But we don't stay there, right? Because the gospel also calls us to imitate that love all the other days of the week. We're called to lay down our lives for others. The deal is, though, most of us will never be called to literally lay down our lives, literally give up our life to show our love for someone. And so how do we do it? What does it look like to lay down our lives? And again, John answers the question for us. Look at verse 17 and 18. John tells us how we imitate Jesus in this. Verse 17. "But if anyone has the world's goods and sees his brother in need, yet closes his heart against him, how does God's love abide in him? Little children, let us not love in word or talk, but in deed and in truth." And so love is a deed, right? It's not just a bunch of talk. It's not a feeling. It's not a sentiment. It's not a warm, fuzzy compassion feeling inside. It's not saying we're doing something. It's not talk. It's a deed. It's an action. You can hate someone either passively or actively, but you can only love actively, right? You can't love someone passively. And according to verse 17, the surest sign that the love of Jesus is in you is that you see a need and you act upon it. Right? You give of yourself to meet the need. John, look at verse 17. "If anyone has the world's goods and sees his brother in need, yet closes his heart against him, how does God's love abide in him?" In other words, if you've got the world's goods and you can meet a need when you see it, but you don't do it, then you're not loving the way that God loves. Who has the world's goods? I'd say almost all of us do, don't we? Like, most of us live in climate-controlled homes or apartments with refrigeration and lots of food in the refrigerator, and lots of changes of clothes in our closet. Most of us drove here today in our own car. I own 4 cars for crying out loud. And I'm not saying that to brag. I'm saying that like as a cry for help. Right? I got to get some people off the payroll. But I have the world's goods. I got some goods. So John is talking to me. And I expect he's talking to you here. He's saying, if you see a brother in need and you can meet the need, then meet the need. Like, don't close off your life. Don't close off your heart to him. Give of yourself to take care of someone else. That's what love is. Love is sacrificial action on behalf of another, for the good of another. It always costs something to love somebody. Always. There's never a time you've loved someone that it didn't cost you. Now, when John talks about not closing our heart in verse 17, he's probably drawing from or referring to Deuteronomy 15. John knew his Old Testament, and most commentators think he was drawing from Deuteronomy 15 here. I want you to listen you don't need to turn there, just listen to a few verses because it's so good, I just have to read it. Deuteronomy 15, this is what God says to the people of Israel right before he takes them into the promised land. They've come out of slavery in Egypt. He's taken them into the promised land. And God says to them, if among you one of your brothers should become poor in any of your towns within your land that the Lord your God is giving you, you shall not harden your heart. You shall not shut your hand against your poor brother. But you shall open your hand to him, and you shall lend him sufficient for his need, whatever it may be. I love how open-ended that is. Like, don't do the mental calculations. Like, whatever it is, open your hand and lend. You shall give to him freely, and your heart shall not be grudging when you give to him. For there will never cease to be poor in the land. Therefore, I command you, you shall open wide your hand to your brother, to the needy, and to the poor in the land. What is he saying? What is Moses saying to us there? He's saying, clear eyes, right? Soft heart, open hand. Can't lose, right? Clear eyes, see the need, open your heart, soften your heart to your brother or your sister and their need, and open your hands and give of what you have. Like, that's what love looks like. It looks like radical generosity, and it's modeled to us by Jesus, who gave his life away on the cross. Now, what might it look like for us practically today in a church like ours? A couple things. I think, first of all, it looks like laying down our lives in all the little ordinary moments. All the little ordinary moments, we lay down our lives. That's what we're called to do. I mean, I say I love my wife. I'd die for her. But when I go to the store for her to pick up a few things, am I willing to pay that cost? Because that's a pretty high cost. Heading up to HEB for like 8 items. Am I willing to do that? I say I love my brother in Christ who's a part of my church, but am I willing to spend a few hours on Saturday helping him with a need? I say I care about the poor. I say I care about the needy, but is there any evidence of that in my budget or in my calendar? See, I think if we're going to be the kind of people that Jesus is, that we would lay down our lives, I think we actually need to be formed in that by laying down all the lesser things in our lives. We're never going to lay down the greater thing of our life if we were not willing to lay down the lesser things like our time, our money, our resources, our possessions. And by the way, here's something I've noticed about us, our church, our generation. I think most of us today find it easier to give our money than to give our time. I think we're pretty closed-handed with our time, aren't we? I think we find it a lot easier to make a donation financially to Fostering Hope Austin than to spend half a Saturday at a babysitter training, much less spending some evenings in the future babysitting for foster families. We're pretty closed-handed with our time. But John is saying here that love sacrifices time. If we want to be the kind of people that give our lives away, we actually need to learn to give away lesser things like our time. Secondly, I think this will look like the church being radically generous in our city. Like with our money, with our time, with our very lives. The early church greatly impacted the culture around it, not because it had a lot of money, not because it had a lot of influence, not because it had any kind of power per se, but because of its radical generosity. I read something about this week about the church in China right now, in light of the coronavirus. Apparently, Christians in China are giving so much money financially to help those affected by the virus that the government has said, hey, no more money. No more funds. Y'all stop giving towards this because the government doesn't want to look like they don't care as much as the church does. Can you imagine that? And there are stories, even in Wuhan, which I think is like ground zero for the coronavirus, where Christians, Chinese Christians, are out caring for people, like giving out masks. They're not holding up in their homes to protect themselves. And that sort of self-sacrificing love is countercultural to the cultural value of self-protection. And we're out here in America like buying up all the hand sanitizer. Right, we're hoarding the hand. You can't find it at HEB. We're hoarding masks. The Chinese Christians are giving away masks and giving away their lives. I'm so challenged by that. What if the church in Austin was known for its radical generosity? Like known for its courage, known for its willingness to give itself away for the good of others. Like, if the coronavirus comes to Austin in earnest, and it probably will, like, what if our posture was, we're going to look for opportunities to care for the vulnerable, right? To care for those who are compromised immune systems. Like, what if we are thinking, how can I buy groceries for my elderly neighbor or care for those who are greatest risk? What if that was our posture rather than self-protection? How can I, you know, take care of myself and wash your hands, right? I'm not saying don't do that. I'm not saying don't be careful. But what if we gave ourselves away in that? That's the definition of love. And it's not easy. It is not easy. Which is why John tells us one last thing about love. Love is an indicator of spiritual life. Love is defined by the gospel. Jesus laid down his life for us, which was not easy. And so finally, we need to know that love is enabled by God himself. God himself enables us to love in this way. This is good news because we're not born with a radically generous heart. I mean, it's not natural to radically want to give our life away to sacrifice on behalf of others. I heard another pastor talking about his little daughter who was having a hard time sharing her toys, her dolls, with a friend. And she came in the house and she was crying because her friend wanted to play with the doll. And the dad knelt down and talked to his little daughter and he said, listen, everything you have is a gift. Like, I bought you everything that you have. I bought you that doll and I can buy you other dolls. So you can just relax and share what you have, right? And you don't have to worry about it because I am giving you what you need. And he says, his little girl said to him, Daddy, I want to be generous. I just don't want to give away anything I love. Can't you relate to that? God, I want to be generous. I just don't want to give away anything that I love. And it's like I need God to kneel down and say, and to remind me, hey, everything you have is a gift. Everything. Here's what's interesting about 1 John chapter 3. I want you to see this. The chapter opens and closes talking about what God has given us. Like the bookends of the chapter, verse 1 and verse 24, both talk about what God has given us. He's given us his love and he's given us his spirit. Look at verse 1, 1 John 3, verse 1. See what kind of love the Father has given to us. Otherworldly kind of love. that we should be called children of God. And so we are. So he's given us his love so that we can be made his children. And then look at right at the end of verse 24, the end of the chapter. And by this, we know that he abides in us by the Spirit whom he has given us. So he's not only given us his love, he's given us his person. He's given us himself, right? This is the context of the Christian life. We live in light of what we've been given. We live according to what we've been given. We live according to grace. Right? We don't live or love by our own merit, right? Not by our own power. And so we live according to his love, which has been given to us. And his love assures our heart, even when our heart condemns us. Look at verse 19. So great. Verse 19, by this we shall know that we are of the truth and reassure our hearts before him. How shall we know we're of the truth? Well, by all the other things we've been talking about up until verse 19, by the fact that we give our lives away, we show love for one another. That's evidence that we are of the truth. But listen, there are going to be times where your heart condemns you, where your heart says, you're not loving good enough. You're probably not even a child of God. You're probably not even a Christian. What do we do when that happens? Verse 20, for whenever our heart condemns us, God is greater than our heart, and he knows everything. So God is greater than our heart. We're not in good standing with God because our heart is so great and so loving. We're in good standing with God because he's so loving, right? We don't earn favor with God by loving others, and we don't forfeit favor with God when we don't love others the way that we should. Here's what reassures our hearts. Objective truth. What's the objective truth? God so loved the world that he gave his only son that whoever believes in him would not perish but would have eternal life. He gave his son for us. And when I bask in the glory of that love, it enables me to love others. I can love others because God has first loved me. So I love by grace. I love by what I'm according to what I've already received. Secondly, we live according to his Spirit, which again was given to us. Look at verse 24. Whoever keeps his commandments abides in God and God in him. What's his commandments? He says them in verse 23. And this is his commandment, that we believe in the name of his Son, Jesus Christ, and love one another. It's one commandment. This is my commandment. Believe in Jesus, and then that will produce love for others in you. Believe in Jesus, you'll love others, and by that, you'll abide in God. You'll know that you abide in God, and God abides in you. And then look how verse 24 ends. And by this, we know that he abides in us by the Spirit whom he has given us. And so now God's Spirit, the person of the Holy Spirit is in us, and he empowers us to love like Jesus, because my flesh doesn't want to do it. I don't want to lay down my life. I don't want to sacrifice my time, my money, my effort, my anything for others in the flesh. But the Spirit produces this self-emptying love in us, this Christ-like love in us. The fruit of the Spirit is love. That's what the Spirit displays through his people, love. God himself enables us to do the very thing he commands. He commands us to love one another, and then he enables us to do it. Isn't that awesome? That we can love according to grace, that he empowers us to do the things he calls us to. So all you need is love, and it's easy. It really is. It's way easier than we thought it was on our own, because when we trust in the Spirit, he produces Christ-like love through us. He displays the love of Christ through us to the world. What a privilege that we have to be a Christian, to display the love of God to others. Let's thank him for that.
Thanks for listening to the podcast of Providence Church. For more resources and info, visit us online at www.providenceaustin.com.